It was 10 minutes before I saw what I wanted, and I set off quickly along the street and into another, and there I overtook the figure ahead of me. "Captain Spring," says I. He swung round as if stung, as near startled as I'd ever seen him.
"The devil!" he exclaimed. "You!"
"Captain," says I, "in God's name, will you give me a passage out of here?"
"What?"
cries he, his scar beginning to jump like St. Vitus' dance.
"Take you? Why the devil should I?"
"Listen, please, Captain. I played up today, didn't I? I could have sworn you to kingdom come, couldn't I? But I didn't. I got you off."
"You got me off?"
He tilted back his hat and glared at me.
"You saved your own dirty little neck, you Judas, you. And you've the nerve to come crawling to me."
"I'll buy my passage. You heard in court. I got Comber's papers. The things he'd filched from you. Well," I forced myself not to notice the darkening scar in his brow, "I've still got 'em."
"Are they price enough?"
His face was like flint.
"Where are they?" he growled.
"In a safe place. But unless I say the word, well, they could get into the wrong hands. You'd be clear and away before that, of course. But your owners wouldn't like it. Morrison, for one."
"Where are they?"
he demanded, and his hands came up as though to seize me, but I shook my head.
"I'll tell you," says I, "in England, not before. They'll be safe until then, on my word." "Your word," he sneered. "We know what that's worth, you perjured rascal. Your friends in the American Navy are looking for you, I don't doubt."
"If they find me, they find those papers," says I. "But if you take me with you, you'll have 'em. And welcome," I thought privately. The knowledge would still be in my head, and I'd use it to squeeze old Morrison dry.
"You'll have them, Captain," I repeated. "By God, I will," says Spring. "I'll see to that."
He stood considering me.
"What a worthless creature you are. What shreds of loyalty have you, you object?"
"Plenty, to myself," says I. "Just as you have, Captain Spring." His scar went pink, then he laughed.
"Well, well, you've picked up some Yankee sauce over here, I believe. Perhaps you're right, though. Horace reminds me. Why should I sneer at you? Mutato nomine de te fabula narratur."
He looked up and down the street.
"Change the name, and the story is told of yourself. I'll take you. But if those papers are not safe, by God, I'll drop you overside with a bag of coal on your feet." "Well?"
"You have my word," says I.
"No," says he. "But I've got your carcass, and I'll settle for that. Now then, are these damned Yankees close behind you? Then step lively, Mr. Flashman."
Strange, I thought. How long it was since anyone had called me by my proper name. For the first time in months, I felt I was almost home again. With Elspeth, and the youngster too. Aye, and my dear papa-in-law. I was looking forward to presenting my account to him. Editor's postscript. On this optimistic note, the third packet of the Flashman papers comes to an end. How far the optimism was justified may be judged from the fact that, instead of describing his return in gloating detail, Flashman concluded this portion of his memoirs by attaching to the manuscript a clipping, cracked and faded with age, from a newspaper, probably the Glasgow Herald, dated January 26, 1849. The news it contains was, of course, unknown to him when he left New Orleans homeward bound. It reads in part, "It is with deep regret that we impart to our readers news of the death of Lord Paisley. This untimely event occurred last week at the home of his daughter, Mrs. Harry Flashman, in London, where he had been residing for some time past. Those who knew him, either as John Morrison of Paisley in this city, where he was formerly Deacon of Weavers in the Trades House of Glasgow, or by the title to which he was raised by a gracious sovereign only in November last, will be united in mourning his sudden melancholy demise."